Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call, and this is the show where we talk about so many aspects of what that admonition from Revelation 18:4 means and how we do it. And it seems of late especially, it's probably never been more important, and we're going to talk about that. And thankfully, we have a special guest, a returning friend, and I'm very glad and kind of looking forward to this conversation. Most of the regulars here will know him. That's Daniel Holdings, author and a talk show host in his own right, and he does quite a bit of stuff with Steve Quayle's organization. I'm sure we'll talk about that as well today a little bit. But, Daniel, there is so much going on. Like I said, I've been looking forward to this conversation. Let me just say, how are you doing, first off? And let me just let you kind of introduce it and take us where you'd like up front.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you, audience, for paying attention and being with us tonight. It's good to be back with you. It's been a while since I've been come on, I've heard my people show, and it's good to be back with the Hebrew Nation audience. Mark, you know, we are living, I was going to say probably, there's no probably about it. We are living in the most dangerous time in all of human history. And if there was ever a time to come out of her, it's right now. Because the deception and evil that is going on around the world, and particularly in the Middle East, is beyond the pale. We need to understand something, that the government of Israel is secular. It is not a biblical government. It's not a godly government. Although there are, you know, Torah practicing Jews within the government, but it's a secular government for the most part.
You got it.
The government that is over this country is a secular government. Now, here's the thing that we need to understand, that the globalists are in charge of governments all around the world, and I dare say are calling the shots in Israel. And what we are seeing in this war is the positioning of chess pieces to bring about their end goal. And we'll talk about what that end goal is in just a minute. But to highlight, and you all know, audience, because you know me, how passionate I am about Israel and Jewish people. But I'm not talking about the Jewish people right now. I'm not talking about Israel. That's the Bible says that that's Yah's land, that Jerusalem is Yah's city, right? So when we talk about the globalists that are in charge and calling the shots, some would take offense at this, and all I have to do is to point to the surprise attack on the last day of Sukkot. Because, Mark, there have to be some people that were not surprised. Because I have an email here that Steve Whale sent it to me this morning, and it's a friend of his who is in Jerusalem. And he is in the IDF. And so he says this, and I said, bear with me, I normally don't like, you know, reading stuff like this on the air, but I think you're gonna get some insight to this. It says, "Hi Steve, I know you're a busy guy. I just received this from one of my colleagues at work. It's circulating now in Israel. Are you pondering any of this? Here's what the commander of the Karim Shalom Battalion, who says the area in detail wrote, who knows the area in detail wrote, something here doesn't add up to me. This is what the commander of the battalion says. This is a mystery that I can't find an answer to since yesterday. I happen to know how things work in Gaza and on the border. I was the commander of the Karim Shalom sector. I was in charge of the Kisuf sector. I know the perimeter fence well. I know how the army works there. I was in the Shati refugee camp in Gaza I was in charge of the Jalalabad, Jabalia refugee
Jalalabad,
camp.
Yeah.
I would make, yeah, exactly. I would make refugee, I would make ambushes on the fence and deep in the area. I met with the Gazans, ate and breathed Gaza. The obstacle, meaning the fence that was supposedly torn down, is built so that even a fox cannot pass it. Set alerts according to three levels of pressure. She must alert when she is caught. There are 24/7 forces that are responsible for arriving within a few minutes, if not seconds, to the point where the alert in the there's alert in the fence. Every day they do at least one penetration practice. Each subdivision has a standby squad whose role is to increase the force in an emergency situation. Observations scattered along the border cover every inch of it. The female observers, and I've heard about these women, Mark, on the border. They use a special battalion of women as observers because men will start to daydream. But women have sharp attention spans, so that's why they use women. The female observers are champions in identification. They don't miss. They detect movement even before it approaches the obstacle, day and night. At the problematic points, dead areas, they place a tank with an observation and detection capabilities and terrifying firepower. In some cases, snipers are deployed in the field. Every day before dawn, there is a dawn alert procedure. At this hour, all the forces are awake. In this case, also the hour when hundreds of terrorists entered Israel. The night shift alternates with the day shift. The commander of each force inspects the access to make sure that there are no infiltrations during the night. Tractors that move on the axis know how to recognize traces. They know who crossed the fence and how much and even when. Each scenario has a clear procedure. For example, a procedure for infiltrating terrorists, a procedure for taking hostages. Everything is written in blood and has been proven itself throughout the years. There are several other layers of security that this is not the place to talk about. In short, we are talking about an obstacle that proves itself for years and years and years. So how the hell, he says, does a Palestinian tractor move forward towards the fence without anyone reacting to it? How did the tractor manage to sabotage the fence for a long hour and open access to Israel without anyone reacting to it? How did hundreds of terrorists and civilians cross the barrier without anyone on our side lifting a finger? How did terrorists arrive on foot and in vehicles armed from head to toe to dozens of Israeli settlements without any reaction from our side? How did it happen that hundreds of terrorists kidnapped dozens of Israelis, woke women and children, babies, old people from out of their bed to their deaths, surprised soldiers, officers, and they were not ready, and kidnapped them to Gaza without anyone stopping them? How is it that one bullet was not fired? How did all of this happen under our noses? Where did an entire division go? Where did three brigades go? Who swallowed nine battalions? What happened to 36 companies? Where did an entire regular infantry brigade go that usually outnumbers the elite? Where were the reserve battalions that augment the regular army? Where did thousands of soldiers go? Someone here needs to provide explanations. So, Mark, I would submit to you, based upon not only this evidence, but other evidence, that this was purposeful. One of the things that Bibi Netanyahu said was that this is our 9/11. That's what he said the day of the attacks. Well, I would submit to you and your audience that it certainly was their 9/11, that it was purposeful and is for a reason. What do you think, Mark?
That's about as close to an admission of we have been lying, and ha-ha, if you're smart enough to read through the tea leaves here, you figured it out. Exactly, Dave. You know, the thing about this, Daniel, that's just beyond the pale is, and I don't think anybody, it was great to hear all that detail because this fellow obviously knows what's going on, and it's good that at least a few of them are speaking up about it. If that was the United States military, they would have threatened them with being, injected and kicked out. And so keep your mouth shut. Don't you dare tell people what idiots we've got running the show here. But one more time, this is another one of those, contradictions that when you see it, you go, come on. It's one thing to say that people are cataclysmically stupid, the Peter principle at play, but it's another thing to think, could the Mossad really be this stupid? Could they really have moved the people that were guarding the border there south of Gaza to another place and just happened to have left that border unguarded where it looked almost as bad as what's going on along the entire southern border of the United States? In other words, this is not just a straining credulity. You'd have to be a blithering idiot to think that this wasn't absolutely positively what was planned. Now, this kind of leads me to the direction that I wanted to just kick around with you for a minute, Daniel, and that is I have read the stuff. I'm sure you've thought through it. All of us would say, okay, here's Bibi Netanyahu. He's in political trouble. He's arguably almost, but not quite. Nobody's quite as crooked as a Biden-Fuhrer, but Bibi's definitely in a whole bunch of trouble. He needs a distraction, and he needs it today, and so that's part A. Part B, there are probably people within the Israeli government, as you point out, very secular, and we'll come back to that again, that are asking themselves the question, hey, if we know that these bad guys, Hezbollah and Hamas and ISIS, and for all practical purposes, are just different facets of Satan's army with different brigade numbers, but all of them want us dead, and so the ends justify the means. If a man comes to kill you, you kill him first. Maybe we will just go ahead and play dead here. Let them come on in. We'll sacrifice a few men, women, or children, a few hundred, maybe a thousand or two, but ultimately we'll get the war we want, and then we'll be able to pound them into non-existence. Existence, and that way we can protect ourselves. It's rationalization for evil, and that's kind of what leads me to the place where I really wanted to start today. We have so much evil here, and the ends justify the means, evil versus evil. As we as outsiders look at this and realize, oh, yeah, they really are jonesing for World War III, how do we begin to sort through this and figure out how we want to, you know, as people who believe in the word of Yah, proceed from here?
Well, Mark, I think it's important that we understand the times that we live in. This action is much larger than Israel. So, but let me just say, okay, there is not one of us. I'm not going to mention his name. There's a talk show host, and he posts news and stuff like that, and he's come out and said something. The effect of, well, Israel is being mean, basically. They're being how can I say this? That he is saying that they're being they're slaughtering the Palestinians, and that their actions are beyond what's necessary. Now, I have a friend, or an old guy, his name's Dan Gordon. He was, he's an American and Israeli citizen. When I was doing Prepare the Way years ago, we had him on. Yeah, I think he was on the Remnant Road when I was on with Al McCarn. Dan has this unique perspective. He was a captain in the IDF for years. He was in the Yom Kippur War. And I just happened to see him on another talk show doing an interview. And he was outraged by the fact that people were saying that politicians in countries are saying that, that Israel is not showing, an equal, response to what happened with the Palestinians, that they were basically overreacting. What they're doing is beyond the pale. Now, this same talk show host that I was just mentioning, lives in, New York, New Jersey or something like that. And I have seen that individual or heard that individual go off at the crime that's going on in that city, in those cities, say that those people should be shot in the street and all this other stuff. What Americans don't realize, even us Hebrews that are in America, what we don't really realize is the oppression of not the Israelis over the Palestinians, but that the Palestinians have over the Israelis. Consider for a moment the billions of dollars that has been given to the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinians and Hamas, for that matter, to turn their community around, to turn the Gaza Strip around, to make it's a hellhole. And they continue to live like that. They will not rise up above their own situation, even when they are helped out. And in the end, people are going to think this is mean. I'm not being mean. I'm being factual. I'm being truthful. They are as bad as the crime-ridden cities of the United States. But imagine that if people, rather than random violence, imagine if people in the United States would just go about killing other Americans on the streets because you're a different color or you're a different race.
We're
this is
there,
exactly
Daniel.
How the Palestinians view the Israelis. So how is it that they are supposed to react to something like this? I'm telling you, Mark, I'm a veteran. And if it was me and I was in that country and I saw what happened, I would want to raise the Gaza Strip. I would do that just to get rid of the infestation, because they allowed Hamas to rule them. They allowed Hamas to launch this attack. Now, but here's the thing, right? Okay, so Daniel, you're saying that the Israelis are right and the Hamas is wrong and they're terrorists. Well, yes, they are terrorists and Hamas is wrong, but I'm not saying that the Israelis are totally right in this issue as well. I'm a both, because folks, this was a setup. Mossad is the foremost intelligence agency in the world. They knew exactly what was happening. In fact, it's come out today, Egypt has said that they gave Israel 3 days warning that this was going to happen at the place that it was going to happen. Now, they either didn't want to heed that warning, didn't believe them, or didn't care if that was going to happen. I would submit to you that it was the latter, that they wanted this to happen. But why, Daniel? Why would they want this to happen? Because, folks, I told you, the government is secular. There are globalists that run the government. There is a plan here that is being put into place. And I'm not just talking about the globalists in Israel. The globalists in Israel are part of the larger globalists that are in the world, that are running other countries as well. What they could not accomplish with the Ukrainian and Russian war, what they could not accomplish with other issues that they were trying to do, they are going to accomplish with a greater Middle East war. The problem, Mark, is that it will literally start World War III and the Ezekiel War, as well as other stuff. And it launches us down this prophetic road that we can read about in the Bible.
Exactly. Well, and let me kick this in one quick direction, and we don't have to spend much time on it if you don't want to, but I mentioned it already, this Genesis 14, it's the first war that's described in Scripture, and it seems to be a prototype for a lot of wars, certainly this one too, and it's been called various things, the War of the Four Kings versus the Five, the first war in Scripture, and what's interesting to me is it's back in the time when Abram, later named Abraham, but this is when he was still Abram, has a nephew named Lot. And essentially what the story says is, came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, or Shinar in some English versions. Some of the sages say, hey, this is probably the same guy that is Nimrod, but regardless, the whole bunch of these guys were bad, bad, bad dudes. And their names even suggest it. One of them is named Be'ra, which means in evil, and Birsha, with wickedness, and so forth. There's no good in this group. They eventually kidnap Lot, and what happens is Abram goes after him. He takes 300 men, and basically, he 318 men, he pursues them, and he divvies them up, and he recovers Lot and all of his goods and all the women that were kidnapped by the bad kings, and he brings them back. Then we see Melchizedek, king of Salem, who comes forth, and there's the blessings that follow here. But I think one of the key things is Abram's response. King of Sodom wants to say, hey, good job, you helped us out, right? You helped out, you killed the bad guys, the Hamas of the day, or the whatever the bad guy might be, but they're all bad. And he says, look, I want to give you all this good stuff. And Abram says, no way, man. I've lifted up my hand unto Yahuwah, Elohim Most High. I'm not going to take a thread nor a shoe latch, not the tiniest little bit of stuff from you, because I don't want anybody saying that you made me rich. And I don't want anything to do with you. And I can't help but think something about that really should help us understand one of the ways we need to respond to this. So go ahead.
Well, and that's, you know, I think that's a good analogy, because we want to look at the situation. I got to tell you, folks, I was last day of Sukkot, you know, I was with a friend, a Christian friend of mine, and I was having breakfast, and I had just recently, I briefly read the news very quickly as I was running out the door, and he said, did you hear about that attack on Israel by Hamas? And I said, yeah, I heard. But in the back of my mind, Mark, I'm thinking, okay, it's more of the same. This is what they've been doing for, you know, years. Little did I know it was what this was. My point is that when I began to scour the news, when I began to see what they did, it turned my stomach. I was so angry, so upset over this evil that had been penetrated on the Israelis. But when you begin to understand that this is was for a larger purpose, it's easy to begin to draw lines in the sand and say, okay, these people are evil. You know, Israel, you do what you need to do. But when you understand that, hold on a second, that it was contrived, that this is not that the violence was contrived, the murders were contrived, but when you understand that the powers that be brought this action about for a specific purpose, you better pump your brakes and go, well, wait a minute. Am I going to side with Israel's government in this issue? Am I going to side with... It's like, Mark, I can almost compare it. Okay, so we have this, and just to go here for a second, we have this this narrative that have been given to us in the United States by the media that Russia is evil because they attacked Ukraine, right? And you're going, well, Daniel, why are you talking about Russia and Ukraine? Because it's the same tactic. That's my point. But when you think about the fact that NATO and the United States have been poking the bear for years, and we basically caused them to act because we were going to put missiles on their doorstep, and they said, no, you're not. But the opposite side of that is that Ukraine is run by Nazis. Yeah. A bunch of Nazis. Okay.
Evil versus evil.
Evil is exactly. Russia is evil, right? Because I've been there and, you know, the people that are in government came from the rough Russian mafia. So it's not like they're the champions, right? But then if you support the Ukraine, then you're supporting Nazis. Who are you going to support in that war? I mean, so it's like, okay, I'm just going to wash my hands in this.
All right, well, I guess we're going to wash our hands and then come back after the bottom of the hour break. Sorry, Daniel, we'll pick it up right there. Stay with us, folks.
We're killing our babies before they are born. Stand up and be kind and come and sound the alarm. Aren't you one of God's children? But nothing. nothing but the devil's pawn. Whose side are you on? Whose side are you on?
I'm a patriot.
Welcome back now to the second segment of the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call. And part of the difficulty with having a good friend and great guy like Daniel on to talk about things like this is we also tend to want to talk right through the breaks because there is so much here to dig into and barely made it back. But anyway, I know where Daniel wants to go as a result. And let me kind of kick it off and introduce it. This idea of evil versus evil, certainly the theme of the show is come out of her and be separate. I think one of the things that both of us really want to emphasize is we have got to recognize that when you're dealing with, a lot of Christianity, by the way, tends to think, oh, Israel is, this is Israel that's talked about in the Bible. Well, it kind of sort of is, but it's not. I like to refer to the whore church and the whore synagogue for those that have heard some of my other teachings. That does not play well on Christian radio, because ultimately they go, oh, you can't be talking like that. Well, the Bible does. Why don't we just tell it like it is and what he says? But ultimately, the problem is we don't understand, because the church does not teach, and neither, by the way, does much of rabbinic Judaism, exactly how we got where we are, and the fact that both kingdoms, northern and southern, fell into idolatry. Both were exiled. Both are still in exile, and both are still in a whole lot of trouble. And so one of the things that people confuse here is understand that the secular government of Israel or of the United States, which once was founded on those self-evident truths but hasn't been for a long time, they're not doing the work of the Creator. They don't even do anything. Sometimes they don't even pay lip service to Him. And that is almost precisely where both Israel and the whore government in the swamp is today. And it's helpful to recognize that. That gives us a little bit, at least, of understanding of what we need to see when we recognize the setup here. And that's what it is. It's a setup. But I want to throw out one thing. I'll encourage folks to look this up. Then I'll go to Daniel. There are three places, and I was remembering these verses over and over again today, where the prophet Jeremiah, who was a prophet that was warning the people of Judah, the southern kingdom, look, you better straighten up and fly right. You're going to go right into bondage. And they didn't listen. He knew it. And they did go right into bondage. But prior to that, in three separate places, almost word for word, the Creator of the universe tells the prophet Jeremiah, he says, look, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen here. And therefore, these people aren't going to listen. They're going to do this bad stuff. They've been doing this stuff that's offensive to me. And therefore, he says, do not pray for this people. This is first in Jeremiah 7:16. Do not lift up a cry or a prayer for them. Don't make intercession for them to me, because I ain't going to listen, even to you. And then just a few chapters later, in chapter 11, he says almost the same thing. Do not pray for this people. Don't lift up a cry of prayer for them, for I will not hear them in the time that they cry out to me, because they're in a whole heap of trouble. And then he says it again in Jeremiah 14, again, almost the same thing. Don't pray for this people. Don't pray for their good, because when they fast, I'm not going to hear their cry. When they offer burnt offerings, nope, I'm not going to accept them. And I'm going to consume them by the sword. And all of that, if we look at it and we ask, isn't that what's going on today? Certainly should resonate. You know, Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat. I think the same thing's true of prophecy, but it rhymes. All right, with all that on the table, Daniel, take us where I know you wanted to go.
Well, you know, Mark, we need to understand what the Father's purpose is in this. Certainly he loves the people of Israel. But the people of Israel, the nation of Israel, like the former nation of Israel out of the Bible, like Judah out of the Bible, turned their backs on him. If you go to Tel Aviv, audience, It is worse than San Francisco.
Yep.
And you, if that is in fact Yah's land, and you have that kind of activity going on, he's got to be seething. He's got to be so angry. But his anger is tempered by his love, and his goal is for people to repent, right, and come back to Torah. That's his goal, right? His goal is to bring people to himself, but people will not come to him when everything is honky-dory. And it doesn't matter if you live in Israel. It doesn't matter if you live in the United States or in France or in Britain or, you know, in China. Oftentimes, we do not cry out to the Father unless there is trouble, unless we are desperate. And I have to think that part of the reason, because look, there are men's plans and men's actions, but there's also the Father's plans and the Father's actions. And I happen to think that he allows some of these things to occur, that are occurring, I should say, for the purposes of bringing the people back to him. But on the other side of that equation, Mark, we have the globalist plans, the government's plans. What are they trying to accomplish? If you go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, it talks about this phrase that's used. I don't know what the phrase is in Greek, but it's the restrainer. And if you read that whole section of the beginning of that page, what the Apostle Paul wrote was that the whole reason that the restrainer is removed is for that man of sin to come on the scene. I would submit to you, audience, that the globalists that are pushing their agenda in the Ukraine and Russia and the United States and the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, this hegemony that is trying to control the world, their whole purpose is to bring about their global governance. It's the same thing what you saw with COVID. It's the same thing that you see with their actions over climate control. They want to bring about global governments or a one world government ruled by this man of sin. Well, in 2 Thessalonians, it says, Mark, that when that the restrainer, whatever that restrainer is removed, that's when the man of sin comes on. That's when they get global governance. That's when we see a one world currency. So the globalists are pushing their agenda. They're going down this road, and it doesn't matter because, as you pointed out from Jeremiah, they are evil, right? So they don't care what it will take. They have a goal in mind, and they are trying to bring it about. And this, I believe, audience, is the reason why that they allowed this attack to happen on Israel. I mean, innocents died in the middle of it, Mark.
Exactly. And I think the more we understand what's going on, the more we recognize it, the more we're able to deal with it. But, as always, here we are thousands of miles away. Some of us have friends that were either in Israel or were planning to go to Israel. And admittedly, I would say, hey, this looks like a bad time to make that trip or to try to get home. But on the other hand, there's no place that's safe in the world if you're not under his protection anyway. So one of the things that I always want to try to focus on is if we can see through this, if we recognize the big lie, well, then what? And I guess one of the examples, and I saw this, I can't tell you how many times I've seen people talk about right-wing talk show hosts, left-wing talk show hosts. Of course, they get all lathered up. They want to see Jews dead, and they want to see people in Israel dead, and they want to see more Hamas, and they want, you know. But ultimately, part of the issue here, in other words, is division. But I can't tell you how many times just in the last couple of days, Daniel, I have seen horrific videos, videos of children getting beheaded, videos of people that were burned alive and executed right there on the spot and so forth, that rave that they had just south of Gaza. And they don't even like to call it a rave in the conservative press because it doesn't make it sound as one-sided as it is. But, this was a bunch of secular kids that were out there doing stuff that they shouldn't have probably been doing on one of his high holy feast days. But nevertheless, we have all of these videos, and they purport to show atrocities that justify kill them all. And then we find out, oh, some of those were fake. Some of them were old videos. I remember there was a video that one of the major three-letter news agencies showed years ago saying that it was the bad guys that they wanted to demonize. I forget which bad guys, so many of them. But ultimately, it turned out it was a film footage from a shoot, literally, of a machine gun shoot in Kentucky. And they were trying to trot it out and say this was the bad guys. Well, the point here is people have to be very careful because there's so much of what we're seeing that are just plain out-and-out lies. Some of it's real, but the trouble is you don't know. And nowadays it's worse still because AI is producing some of it, and they're deep fakes. So, again, the caution is people just have to be very careful about what they believe because, as Yeshua warned, there are going to be deceptions and wars and rumors of war. See that you're not deceived. This one's going to be one for the record book so bad that if it went on, even the elect would be deceived. And I think we're at least seeing that now. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that. That's out of Matthew 24. This is fascinating. Well, and to let you know what time it is, audience. You know, we sit around, we look at prophecy, we wonder, okay, what time is it? Where does this fall? And I'm not a Hal Lindsey fan, so I don't think that everything's going to happen. This is going to happen. I happen to think markets all going to happen all at the same time. when everything piles down on itself. But that what Yeshua says in Matthew 24, the first thing he says is that there would be earthquakes in diverse places, right? Earthquakes in diverse places. Well, interestingly enough, a report came out that said that just yesterday that Italy is evacuating around a supervolcano. I didn't even know there was a supervolcano in Italy, but around their supervolcano because they think it's going to erupt. And it just the day of these attacks, there were a couple earthquakes, and you didn't hear much of them, but there were a couple earthquakes in Afghanistan in the 6th range. So earthquakes in diverse places. But then he says this, and there will be wars and rumors of wars, as you mentioned just a moment ago. And then he says that nation will rise up against nation. That word in the Greek, nation, is the word ethnos, where we get our name, a word ethnicity from. So what Yeshua is saying is that there is going to be race wars, that you are going to see races rise up against races. Now, when he said this on the outskirts of Jerusalem, I could imagine him looking off into the distance to where the Gaza Strip would one day be, because that is exactly what you have. They are Arabs in the Palestinians are Arabs in the Gaza Strip. They are a different ethnicity than the Israelis, than the Jews. So what you have is this Arab group rising up against the Jews, the Israelis, of a different ethnicity altogether. And then he says this, Yeshua says this, he says, and then kingdom will rise up against kingdom. And kingdom is what you and I would call a nation state or a country. So if you preface that discussion with what he just said a second ago, that there would be wars and rumors of wars. What we see is that first those wars and rumors of wars begin with ethnic strife or race wars, and then the real wars break out, World War III, or as you and I would call it, the Ezekiel War. So when Damascus is made a ruinous heap, when what we are seeing right now, Mark, are Arab countries all around the world taking their stance against Israel, in spite of the fact that Israel is the one that was attacked. And it is exactly what you said. You have the kings of the earth, evil kings, that want to fight over Israel. And the lines are being drawn. Even Saudi Arabia was blaming, 2 days ago, was blaming Israel for being attacked. Said it's your fault. It makes no sense unless you look at it from the the stratospheric view, that you look at the bigger picture of what's going on here. And the bigger picture of what's going on here is the end of the age, my friend.
I can't argue with any of that, Daniel. So let's ask the question. So where do we go from here? How do we, as people who are paying attention, how do we avoid being deceived? So he says, see that you're not deceived. And I think we can see it. We can recognize, wow, there's no shortage of that. They're certainly working hard. They're trying, and they're going to get what they want with the vast majority of people. Not only going to be deceived, but they're going to be destroyed. They don't recognize. Nice that, hey, well, let me throw out one other element here in the last 10 minutes of the show. Because as you know, and we both know, because we pay attention to economic situations, the dollar is literally a dead man walking. How long, we don't know. It's way long in the tooth. There has never been a fiat currency in history survive. We've talked about these things many, many times. And we saw today that the new CPI figures came out. Oop, they're worse than we expected. If they destroy the production facilities and the supply chains, you know what? Doesn't matter how many dollars you print or how high you raise interest rates, if there ain't no production or no food to be had, it's going to be really expensive. Even if the Fed says, we're going to charge you mafia-like rates, that's not going to solve it. So one of the things I think is going on here is, if you know that the economy is going to be destroyed and you can't stop it, why not just get a world war going? That'll take people's minds off of it. Go ahead.
I forget who said when goods and services don't cross borders, armies will. and I think we're seeing that right now. And Mark, you're absolutely right about the economy and the dollar in particular. Just last week, our supposed ally dumped like some amazing figure, like $800 billion in treasuries, dumped it onto the open market. Sold it off, right? Meaning that, for those of you that don't understand such things, it means that it makes treasuries really, really undesirable. So we're trying to sell treasuries for the sake of going into debt more so that we can prop up our economy that's debt-ridden, unjust weights and measures. But at the same time, you have our allies that are like shooting us in the foot. At the same time, you have BRICS, you know, all these BRICS countries that are coming. It used to be just five. Now it's a bunch, including many OPEC countries, are now trading in something other than the dollar. You have the bank rates that are the money rates that are going through the roof. And you're right, it's making things much more expensive. So we have all of these factors, all these pressures on the economy, and the bottom line is that the dollar and our economy cannot sustain that pressure. We know it. The globalists around the earth know it, and I don't think this hegemony is going to go down without a fight. You're seeing the chess pieces moving in the Middle East as camouflage, if you will, as a smoke screen. But also, as I said, I think that they are driving this to a one world currency. They're driving this to a one world government, a global governance. And they have to put pressure on certain ways in order to get people's emotions boiling. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing. I want to take Israel's side in this issue. I think they were attacked. People were killed. It's unfair, but I'm not foolish enough to think that they're telling us the truth through all of it, Mark.
Agreed. So again, with all of this going on, Daniel, and understanding that. Well, let me go back to Abraham. Before that, he was Abram, of course, and this war. He's given a chance to essentially say, hey, you know, choose sides and you get your wonderful reward here. Take all this great purloined stuff that we, the evil king, stole from the other evil kings. Hey, they're all evil, right? Don't you don't care. Doesn't matter. The ends justify the means. Isn't that what we're hearing? And he didn't do it. I don't want to take so much as a shoe latch from you guys. I don't want anybody saying that this evil king or that evil king. I don't want somebody saying the Biden cure made me wealthy or, you know, fill in the blank that any of these other scumbags out here, made me wealthy. And I think some of the things that we ought to be paying attention to probably resonate along those lines.
Well, and, you know, and that is really true. I mean, you're going to be offered, audience, you're going to be offered money. You're going to be offered services for your allegiance. That's what the COVID payments were all about. I didn't take a dime, by the way. You're going to be offered, you know, subsistence in order to have your needs met. But, you know, like Abraham, we have to draw a line somewhere. And yes, pray for the people of Israel. Pray for that situation. It's terrible what's going on there. Pray for the babies, pray for the children, pray for the mothers, innocents that are in the midst of this. You know, get on your face and worship the Lord. Make sure you have your nose in Torah. Make sure you're keeping his ways and following his ways. This is how we honor him. And when we do these things, Mark, we're able to keep from being deceived, we're able to keep from being lost in the fray, because there is certainly a whole lot of deception going on.
Agreed. With about 3 minutes left, anywhere else? Where else would you take us as we ask the question? You know, what do we expect next? I think we're going to see all of these things. I think we're certainly going to see additional moves. It wouldn't surprise me to see this massive invasion. It's already been set up and planned, so you know that they're going to use this as an excuse. There are going to be a whole lot of people that are going to use this as an excuse for more division in the United States and to say, hey, let's bring, you know, not only nation against nation and ethnicity against ethnicity, but all these people on the streets fighting one another. They're jonesing for that. And we're going to see it in neighborhoods. We're going to see the smoke screen. I think we're going to see the meltdowns and the unavailability of certain goods and services. A lot of stuff. And I guess the concern I have is if people don't prepare for it, don't understand it, and aren't psychologically and especially spiritually prepared, they'll get sucked in and then be caught off guard. And then when they get the double whammy, it's a death blow. Go ahead.
Well, I think people need to understand the importance of situational awareness. Know where you are, know what's going on in your immediate field to safeguard against problems. Tomorrow, on Friday the 13th, how appropriate,
yep.
Palestinians have called, or Hamas has called for a day of rage. And I really do expect bombs to be going off and people to be getting stabbed and that kind of thing, shot. So know where you are, know what's going on, and make sure that you are safe. But I think situational awareness is a good thing to have anyway. The other thing to do is to make sure you just use the P word. Make sure that your preps are done. I did something today. I had to go out and spend some money for a couple things that I haven't wanted to spend the money on, but I don't know how much longer they're going to be available. So I had to go out and take care of that stuff. Make sure that you can at least survive and be self-sufficient. And then, of course, lastly, make sure that you have the that you hear the voice of the Father, that you hear the voice of the Ruach, and that you know which way to go, to the right or to the left. Because these are the days, audience, that we need to be paying close attention to how we are supposed to be walking with them, because to not do that could very well mean our lives or the lives of people that we love.
Amen. Okay. Well, I guess when it all comes down, Daniel, and as we go to break, we'll say it this way. You and I talked here not long ago on a show that you did about the fall feast and this time of understanding the shadow pictures of things to come. I think that's vital. But as we look at all of these things and recognize how they come together, I guess the bottom line is never underestimate the fact that he has warned us about all of this in advance, whether it's watching and guarding his appointed times or recognizing realizing that there are things that aren't money, but that still, by hook and by crook, manage to become the world reserve currency, and that evil men are more than willing to commit murder for them and to hang on to their power to print dishonest money out of nothing by any means necessary. Well, not only are we starting to see how the pieces fit together, but also what we need to do about it, and more importantly still, who we serve and what that means. Hey, great to talk with you, Daniel. Thanks for being with us, and likewise, folks, Shabbat Shalom, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.